Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show. Hey, there are numerous reports that people in the United States still play a ball and stick sport called baseball, though it has not been played in Chicago in ages. Tonight, there's a chance that sport could be played on NBC Sports Chicago. White Sox escaped the Arctic Circle and are scheduled to play in Oakland, where it was pouring this morning. Mother Nature allows it. Jason Benetti and Stephen Stone will have the call at 9 o'clock. Cubs didn't play yesterday. They won't play today. And they probably shouldn't have played on Saturday. But they did, and they were batting at the right time. A 9-run bottom of the eighth at Frigid Wrigley gave the Cubs one of the most improbable wins in team history. Meanwhile, they needed a huge rally because Jose Quintana got lit up. Will the Cubs ever get the return on their high-priced investment? And the first voluntary practice of the Matt Nagy era is this week. Meanwhile, the NFL draft is 10 days away. Will Ryan Pace pick up a new weapon for Mitchell Trubisky or go defense with pick 8? And welcome in to Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Hope you had a great weekend. Great start to your week. I'm David Kaplan. Let's meet the panel for today's show. You can follow him on Twitter at Mark Grody Sports. He is Mark Grody of the Score Sports Radio 670. He's David Haw. He is the In the Wake of the News writer at the Chicago Tribune. Catch him on the Score. And Teddy Greenstein, back from his trip to the Masters, and he writes for the Chicago Tribune. All right, Cubs and Cards postponed for tonight due to the cold climate. But they did play baseball on Saturday in a game you watched here on NBC Sports Chicago, and it was insanity. Joe Maddon said the single worst weather he has ever experienced, but they tied it on Javi Baez's rocket to the left center field gap. David Haw, 10-2. I'm falling asleep in the green room going, okay, this stinks. No one's going to watch our post game. And then here they come.
And did, your post game did pretty good numbers then, too, right?
It did.
You were gloating on the post game. You were talking, what did you call the Twitter idiots? Did you call them idiots?
I did not ever.
Clowns. Did you sound clowns?
No, I did not. I don't personally attack.
Yeah, you did a little bit.
No.
You were gloating. Look, can you imagine how long this would be if the Cubs hadn't won in Chicago? Because they haven't played since then. If they had lost that game, how long this layoff would seem? It was a great comeback. Crazy game. How do you explain it? You can't.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. And do you realize that we were one out away from the Cubs going into position player pitching mode?
Yeah, Efren Navarro.
Yeah, it would have been Efren Navarro, and then who knows who else after that. So, yeah, I mean, it was an absolutely amazing. That's one of those games where you just, if you watched the beginning and then you saw the result, you're like, they won that game?
They did a shockingly good job of grinding. I mean, you know, I'm watching early on in the game, and it's like, all right, this game's going to be about 2 hours and 7 minutes. Nobody wants to be there. And look at these.
You were there? You covered that game?
I actually didn't. No. I was there Thursday, okay. Friday, and Sunday. Sunday, I wore long underwear for a game I was going to cover in an indoors press box. I think that has to be the first for that. But, yeah, so Saturday, Gonzo was out there for 9 hours.
Cubs press box is indoors?
I know, really? Barely. It's about 48
really?
Degrees for some of that. But, really, the way these guys play that inning, when nobody thought they had any hope, and to score 9 runs on 3 hits because they're standing in there getting hit and taking all those walks, man, that was shocking.
Well, Atlanta's manager kind of gave up, too. Snitzker, I mean, he didn't have anybody warming up. And I don't blame him.
How do you even warm up?
I mean, yeah, honestly, like everybody.
It's a relative term.
It was ridiculously cold weather, but it was managed like, let's get the heck out of here. And I think the Cubs were even thinking that. The Cubs have to look back and say, look, we're up there taking our hacks. We got lucky.
9 runs after 2 outs, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's the most incredible thing.
Yeah. 10-5 and 2 outs, and all of a sudden you get 9 runs. Yeah. It's insane.
9 runs on 3 hits.
And the last couple were Little League style. You know, the fact the ball's
throwing
getting away.
Center field. And
it was just crazy to watch.
So I talked to a player today, and he said to me, dude, I'm just telling you, we could not feel the ball.
Right.
It was like throwing a cue ball from a game of billiards.
Ooh.
And he said Newcomb is from Connecticut. He said he's a little more comfortable pitching in those temperatures. But he said a lot of the relievers, he said Jose Quintana, they could not feel their fingers.
Right.
He said, I'm just telling you, on both sides, it was stupid.
It was ridiculous. And Joe, very even keel, kind of reasoned after the game, worst conditions he's ever played in. What I'm wondering is, all right, Sunday was unplayable. I mean, that was obviously going to get banged. But,
so
but
today.
Tonight, well, tonight I think oftentimes they would play this game.
But I
mean,
it's but don't
it's
you
cold,
think
but it's not so like brutal.
Heat from Saturday? That's, they're not. I'm wondering.
But when your manager, comes out and is as vocal as he is after a victory, saying you should not have played.
Yeah.
There's no way they could have played tonight.
Well, I wouldn't say there's no way they could have played tonight. It's in the 30s. I mean, it's uncomfortable, but that's what I'm wondering. Is anything that Joe said or the players said? And also, we're still unclear. I know that Sully put it on Crane Kenny today.
I did some due diligence.
Yeah,
it is not.
The Cubs say it's New York and MLB. Nobody seems to know.
Well,
it also depends on if it's the last time a team comes into a city.
I was told by the Cubs this afternoon that there is Theo, Jed, Joe, Crane, Alex Sugarman, and three or four other executives, they all meet. Yep. They go over the weather reports. And in the end, the guys making – it's a consensus, but the guys who are making that call start with a T and a J. Their names are Theo and Jed.
Oh, so not MLB.
Baseball ops, I think.
Once the game starts.
No, but let's say before the game.
Before?
Who decided that Saturday's game should be played?
That one I can't answer.
I know, and it's such a basic thing, and it's you ask, and it's such a long, convoluted answer.
Is there ever one person?
But there is a group effort.
Well, ultimately, there has to be one person.
It depends
on
who.
What if the two teams don't agree?
I think it's MLB that ultimately does. But both managers have input, both GMs have input. You know, the powers that be all get to decide, and whoever kind of makes the best case.
It's an interesting point, though, Teddy, because I think tonight is not just your ordinary Monday night in April game.
Yeah.
I mean, from a television standpoint, WGN had a big anniversary planned. It was a league game. It was a cable game. That's why it took until noon, I think, to discuss all these things.
It was a nationally televised game.
Yeah, so you have a lot of factors in play. Had Joe not been so outspoken, I think, and had he not been so respected in the organization, I don't know. Maybe they would be playing tonight.
Let's get to the real case here. Chop 62 games off the season, play 100 games the season in May, and I don't want to hear about the money loss because that, like, it just gets dismissed.
But Sammy Sosa would like that. His home run records would look really good.
Right. But it is never going to happen.
Why? Because of money?
Yes. You really think, first of all, players have come out and said, you want to cut it to 152? I'm not giving you a nickel back. You want to cut it to 100?
Absolutely, I want to cut it to 100. Let's start with the fact that we are always told, all of us in this profession, that we should not make anything out of the first 10, 15 games of the year. Every day when we open our mouths, we are told it doesn't really matter, small sample size. So nothing matters in the first 20 games, the first 30 games of baseball.
But the players aren't giving you money back.
Economically, it'd be hard to do that, Mark, because it's not a broken – I mean, there's a lot of problems with baseball's economy in terms of the way it's functioned, but it's not – a losing proposition.
I understand that, but I think that things evolve, and maybe there's a little loss at first, but things evolve. They find a way. Maybe the games would be more entertaining.
Geographically, they would probably come up with a solution before they would just wipe out 62 games.
Maybe pace of play fixes itself.
Why would you ever build a stadium north of Atlanta without a retractable roof nowadays?
Yeah, okay.
I mean, that's one other thing, too.
But you've got, let's see, the Brewers have retractable roofs.
Yeah.
Right. The Twins just built a new stadium.
Don't
they went from a dome to an outdoor.
Don't they have to be, like, kicking themselves there?
That'll be in the next wave. Like, seriously.
They'll get the
like
games
all
in the summer when the weather's
Cincinnati
good.
Cincinnati has a fairly new stadium.
Yeah.
The next
Pittsburgh
wave will
has
all
a fairly
be
new stadium.
Retractable.
Philly has a fairly – there's no new stadiums coming, kid.
Well, the fact that they all don't have roofs on them, to me, is a – Milwaukee
you
did the right
thing.
You
want to play the Mall of America. Right?
I'd be fine with that.
Yeah.
I'd be fine if they played indoors. I'm traditionalist or not. I think that you have to look at the practical issue here.
But the Metrodome, I'm sure you were there for baseball.
Yeah.
Awful.
Awful. I went to college up there and went to games. It sucked.
Yeah, I'm sorry that for 8 or 10 games at Target Field, it's very cold. But, I mean,
there are a lot of well-done stadiums that have retractable roofs.
Yeah, I think Miller Park is sensational.
So sensational? I guess I haven't been there.
For every bad example, you can come up with a good example.
I think it's really
practicality has to factor in at some point.
Has Miller Park improved in the last 10, 12 years? So dank.
Not really. What I don't like about it is the lighting is not great there. There's like a tint to it. And I don't know if you noticed, this is like a subtle thing, but Jason Hayward, when you see Jason Hayward struggling to play right field in Miller Park, that says something to me. So I don't know. It's a nice, comfortable stadium, but the lighting's weird.
All right, let's talk about Jose Quintana. Jose Quintana scuffled mightily on Saturday. I think he went 2 1/3 innings, and he was not good. And after the game, he told someone that I know in there that said, he goes, I couldn't feel my fingers.
You don't want to sound like an excuse maker. These guys make a lot of money and they're professional athletes, but the natural challenges are creating unnatural results. This is not a pitcher that looks as bad as he looked on Saturday.
Right.
That's got to, he's got to, you got to give him a mulligan here. That was a terrible, terrible day to pitch or to do anything except for maybe go ice fishing.
Yeah. I'll trust you on the ice fishing thing. Yeah. First batter of the game, he easily could have gotten a ring up strikeout with two
Correct.
Strikes. And then you saw the one that falls in front of Almora in a normal game, you know, that's probably caught. So throw it out. We don't have to overreact to as we said, a guy playing with Chris Bryant wearing a mask on his face.
Yeah, if he says he couldn't feel his fingers, he gets the benefit of the doubt, especially when his outing previous to that was excellent. Was great. I mean, he was in his, you know, hit the corners, paint the plate. So
there's our Ankin Law poll question. Are you concerned about Jose Quintana's struggles? And you can vote right there. Yes, terrible trade. A little. No. R-E-L-A-X.
Yes, terrible trade.
No.
Eloy Jimenez is not even back to baseball activities yet. Okay?
This is not for real.
If we're going to evaluate this trade every week of the season, that's not a terrible trade.
Agreed. Oh. That's, first of all, the price of pitching. Now, I did say many times they paid Mercedes prices and might have gotten a Buick. We're going to find out. I want to see him take the next step.
You need to come up with a different analogy. A car that doesn't run well in cold weather, perhaps. Mm. You know, something that maybe because...
A Fiat.
Yeah, maybe a Fiat. Fiat's bad and bad.
I mean,
bad
I'm just assuming
weather.
It's kind of small. Maybe it does. Maybe it probably doesn't really have four-wheel drive.
Maybe they paid for a Lamborghini and got a Corvette. But Chevy makes Corvette, and I like Corvettes.
Yeah.
You like how are Corvettes in the winter?
They're not
bad. You were driving that Corvette a lot in the winter.
Yes, I was. It was my only vehicle.
Okay. Really?
Absolutely. Look, I'll judge this team like I did last year.
Yeah.
You get me to the All-Star break. Let me see where they're at.
Well, even if Jimenez turns out to be a superstar, if they win a World Series title with Jose Quintana,
because
nobody cares.
Yeah, you're right. It's absolutely correct.
Nobody cares.
I just think that you have in these cancellations and postponements make it more difficult. But last year taught us, if the year before didn't, to caution against premature, you know, conclusions. Because it's so early. Last year I thought, boy, they looked at the hangover, all that stuff. They were still in the NLCS.
But last year, but it was a grind, man.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Like can they
end up in the NLCS? How bad could the year have been?
But no, it wasn't a bad year. I'm just saying, like, if the Cubs are 5.5 games behind Milwaukee at the break again this year, or another team, do you see them overcoming that again this year to go through what they had to go through last? And you're right. You're right. It is ridiculous to say it was a bad season.
Probably,
but
so, Mark.
It was
probably
hard
so.
To get there. I think that those teams have, like, who knows, maybe Pittsburgh is good. I doubt it that they're going to keep up the pace that they're playing. But I'm just saying,
big injury
today. I don't think that you can – you can't live by falling behind early and then coming back late in seasons. It's rare. It's hard to do. They did it last year, but I don't know if they can do it again this year.
Don't you think that overall the starting rotation, which has not been good the first couple spins,
is going to be A-okay?
Yeah.
You got to trust that.
Speaking of Pittsburgh, I want to get your take on this. So I was out there for all the Javi Baez, Clint Hurdle stuff. I cannot believe that Clint Hurdle thinks it's his job to comment on how Javi Baez reacts to a pop-up. I thought it was incredibly inappropriate. You obviously talk to baseball people all the time, Cap. What are they saying?
There's a handful that I know that think that Javi and think that Wilson are too out there. But there's also a number that I talked to that went, Joe Girardi. Okay, yeah. He's not working in the game now. I called him up. I said, can you give me your take on Wilson Contreras? You were a catcher. He goes, I love that kid. I love the passion he plays with. I love how hard he plays. He goes, that guy could play for me any day of the week. Yeah. So there's different perspectives. I mean, let's be honest here. Clint Hurdle was the guy who put his wife in wet T-shirt contest when he was playing for
the Royals. Okay, that has nothing to do with the argument.
I mean,
all right, come
let's
on.
Stop talking
on,
about
hey,
respect
how do you know,
the game
how do you,
here.
How do you know that?
T-shirt.
How do you know that?
Because
I know. And you remember that.
I know.
That's funny.
I got to tell, I think Clint, honestly, I'm not just saying this to be contrarian. I think Clint Hurdle was totally and completely justified. First of all, he was asked about it. Secondly,
no, he wasn't asked specifically about it. He was asked about Javi being an exciting player. Or, yeah, I mean,
I think Clint was way out of line.
Go on. But now let's hear it.
Okay, no, but listen, but okay, so Javier Baez, after the game, immediately is apologizing. Why? Because probably players on the Cubs
Pedro
got on.
Strope went to him.
Okay.
Well,
see, all right. All right. And even Joe. So you have his own team saying you can't show up the other team. Why isn't the other team allowed to react the same way?
Here's the thing. You had two
if
things.
If you were showing up, you were showing up.
Here. Number one, Hurdle wasn't wrong, because and Javi and the teammates' reaction to show that he
shouldn't
wrong.
Have handled it the
but,
way he did.
But you don't.
It's not for him.
A manager
to talk
doesn't
about
criticize
why
another
not?
Manager's
why?
Players.
Why? If the other team was, if
it
protocol
would be like
was
if the
broken.
Bulls have an issue and a player has an issue and the assistant coach, and then Steve Kerr is going to say,
no.
"Oh yeah, I think they should have suspended
him." No,
like
it was not. It wasn't a private thing. It was a. It was a public showing up of the other team.
I'm with you to the point.
So why can't the other team then say,
"So if you pop up and fly out now, you have to have a certain. So you're not allowed to be really upset. So you have to like lay your bat down."
Okay. Well, no. Then tell that
so guys complain when people celebrate home runs too much. Now they're complaining.
So
when
Pedro Strope was wrong then?
No, he should. It's an internal team.
No, it's not because it was done publicly. It was done.
Everything's done publicly. It's on the field.
No, Javier Baez did something that
and the Cubs players.
Javier Baez
deal with their own.
Javier Baez broke baseball protocol. So the Cubs were like, "You got to tone it down. You embarrassed the other team." So the team that was embarrassed, why aren't they allowed to say that's ridiculous.
Tomorrow night, a Cardinals player pops up and he slams his bat down. Joe Maddon is going to say, "I think Tommy Pham really was inappropriate there."
He would be completely entitled to say that. That's insane.
He was at Teddy asked him. He should say, "Mike Matheny's a great manager. I'm sure he'll handle his team just fine."
You manage your players. You don't manage the other team's players.
The point is that the other team was shown up, right?
They're
were they
shown
not?
Up because well,
first
he
of
popped
all,
up.
Because he
was bad about okay, it? If they if
Has
they weren't shown
up,
if he wasn't shown up, then why would
do you not like bad?
No. Answer my question. Why would Pedro Strop say something to Javier Baez? Because it's not cool to show up the other team.
It's not the other team.
It's a bad look.
That guy has to run harder.
It's a bad look to the other team. You are upsetting and showing up the other team, which has a right to respond.
Do you not like bad flips?
I actually find them entertaining. I mean, some of them.
But those are celebrations, not frustration. I think that, you know, what Mark's trying to say is that, you know, Hurdle was right. But what we can agree on, hold on, is that you don't want to hear that from another manager. It's like a family. If you have a family member that you are always on, you're always late, you tuck your shirt in, if it's your kid, you know, you need to brush your hair, you need to look better, you need to behave better. Great. But if somebody else, other parent comes in and tells your kid that, you're like, "Hey, wait a second. No way. You don't have a right to do that. That's my kid. I'll deal with it."
If it happened internally,
we can't yell at our pledges. Only we can yell at our
Javi
pledges.
So Javi Baez was wrong. You don't do that. And Pedro Strop called him out on it. But Clint Hurdle, he crossed a line because he's a manager of another team.
100%.
So they're not, when a team gets shown up or feels that they have or the appearance of it, they're not allowed to react.
You can react, but don't be surprised when criticism comes your way.
When there's blowback back.
But the whole reason Javier Baez was told to tone it down is because he committed a baseball offense to the other team.
First
and now
all,
you guys are saying the other team is not allowed to react.
Like this whole thing
I agree with you. It's all within, up.
When have you ever heard
it's all within the confines of baseball, of course.
Somebody who makes an out and is too upset about it. I think Pedro Strop talked to him because you do have to respect 90. I mean, you have to run hard, and that's an issue. But this whole concept of you made an out against us, so I want you to behave
appropriately.
That's
a totally different issue. That's a totally different issue. If we don't like baseball protocol, that's fine, but we don't play baseball. This kind of stuff does upset baseball players. It upset the Cubs that he did this, at least Pedro Strop, as far as we know, and it upset the Pirates.
You know, it doesn't upset
So why can't
fans.
Both sides
fans
react?
Realize that, you know, this is entertainment. And Javi Baez is a very entertaining guy. And to suck the life out of him and try to make him like every other guy is ridiculous. Let him be who he is.
Hey, Mark, that's a totally different show. That's a different argument. We're talking about what does exist right now. What does exist?
In Hurdle's mind. He doesn't speak for every single person in baseball.
Neither does Pedro Strop. Neither do the other Cubs players who probably thought Javier Baez should have toned it down a little bit right there. I'm sure Joe Maddon thought that.
I'd recommend that you read baseball's unwritten rule book. Quick read.
I don't get it. You mean
I hate the unwritten rules. Yeah.
Well, that's one of them.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. So they exist. I'm not saying they're good.
David, you had heard in the unwritten rules that there's a certain reverence of when you pop up that you have to behave. Because I covered baseball for 6 years, and
I'm very impressed. Okay.
Yeah.
But look, he's reacting in a way that you're showing frustration. I don't think anybody disagrees that he crossed the line when he flipped the bat up. You don't want that. You don't want to do that.
Correct, but I don't believe it. The other manager's job to call it out.
Well,
he wants to call Joe and say, hey, Joe, do me a favor. That really bothered me. Yeah. Okay, that's between two guys.
Dave, that baseball offense was committed to that other team. Teddy, you're right. These are stupid. The protocol is dumb.
But and he calls out Contreras
but it
at
exists.
The same time.
Right.
But
it
he's
exists.
Not allowed to do
as
this.
As long as the protocol exists, then the other team is allowed to get mad about
Wilson
it.
Wilson Contreras did nothing wrong. He called him out, too. Clint Hurdle conducted himself in a jackassian
totally.
Manner.
Jackassian.
Whoa. Yes.
We like that there.
He did. All right. Somehow the NBA was able to begin its playoffs without the Bulls taking part. But there were plenty of former Bulls taking part as Tibbs' alumni team pushed the best team in the league to the very end. Meanwhile, LeBron's quest for an 8th straight finals appearance hit a big snag against the Pacers. Is this finally the year King James watches the finals from home?
Crank up the heat and turn on STL. On NBC Sports Chicago, host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table in a half hour on the topics that are trending with our teams.
We got the most mismanaged basketball team in the history of the world.
Which franchise made the gutsiest draft day move? I think Pack wanted to do this, and he finally got his way.
Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.
All right, welcome to the Matt Nagy era. The voluntary workouts are going on. He's putting in his offense. And he's finally coaching the football team.
Forget the football team. He's getting the Cubs some runs.
How about that? Saturday, he sang with his kids. Let's get some runs here.
Whatever he touches turns to gold. He's undefeated, right? And everything that he has done and said since they hired him has been positive. People, I think, want to be excited about the Bears. We're in Chicago. You know that.
I am excited.
People are, and I think that, you know.
I picked them to win 9 games.
It's a very, very conflicting two things going on, though, with the Bears, to me. Okay, maybe it's just me. I think everything Matt Nagy has done has been positive and easy to see optimism. His boss still was 14-34 the last 3 years.
Right.
So when Ryan Pace makes a decision, your instinct to me is to be skeptical. Cameron Meredith decision. Mm-hmm. You know, the draft we're going to look at very closely. Do you trust his judgment? Those things you have a right. I think it's appropriate to be skeptical, critical. With Nagy, you want to say, okay, great. This guy's got a great offense. Let him go.
Yeah, and it's really heartening to see, too, that it's clear that Ryan Pace is working closely with Nagy on the players that they already have signed in Allen Robinson, Trey Burton especially, Taylor Gabriel. And I don't think I've ever heard this much sort of positive noise from other coaches, other players, even the players that are on the Bears, for an incoming Bears head coach ever.
Wasn't there the same optimism after John Fox was
no,
hired?
No, absolely not.
Really? No, there was excitment for Fox. Yeah.
Not okay.
I'll take your word on that. I thought Super Bowl caliber coach.
No. There was just, like, Trestman was so bad that everybody was.
But see, though, that's Mark, I think that if you go back and, you know, guilty.
Yeah, yeah.
Present company included, okay? I think I was part of this. You were probably part of it, too.
I hated the hire
Come on, Cap.
You know, we battled on
I know, but listen, listen. Trestman. When Trestman came.
I'm talking about Fox.
Yeah, I'm not talking about Fox. When Trestman came, some of the same rhetoric was breath of fresh air.
Absolutely.
Offensive innovation. Whiz. Look at this guy. He's introducing them to the idea of a football.
I was with him.
He's coaching the man.
Right. Until we got Tim Brown on the day they hired him on the radio.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
David and I get Tim Brown on.
Said,
and Hall of Famer, Heisman Trophy. He played for Trestman. And I go, yeah, welcome to Cap and Haw. Tim, we're thrilled to have you. Your thoughts on Mark Trestman? He goes, I still can't believe somebody gave that guy a head coaching job.
I know.
Because there is no way he can stand up in front of 53 men and control that room.
Except in Canada. But he does it in Canada and does it well.
Canada does it well, but then you had a guy like Steve Young, I think, was swearing by Trestman. So, I mean, Mark, we have heard examples of guys who were given the benefit of the doubt before they really had earned it.
I think that the difference with Trestman, though, it was sort of like, and I understand what you're saying, it was something different, but it was like, he was like exotic, he was writing books, there was something...
A guru.
There was something mysterious about Trestman, whereas with Nagy, it's right there. And
he's a football guy. Let's say it. He was a football guy.
He speaks plain English.
Yes.
Nagy, at least. I mean, and they haven't done a thing yet. And I would say, if you want to really say who had the most hype coming in as a head coach, at least in my lifetime, was Dave Wannstedt, because he was the hot shot candidate.
He was
the Dallas
Everyone
Cowboys.
Everyone thought he was going to the Giants.
That's probably
right.
A better
Michael McCaskey stole him away.
That is probably a better comparison.
But he was even – yeah, I guess I was going to say he was more proven, but maybe not, because Nagy was a very good offensive coordinator.
No, he was more proven. But yeah, he won a Super Bowl as a defensive coordinator.
Champion, and
you're coming in
right
as a guy with already –
I guess the only – so I haven't met Nagy yet. I'm just open-minded, very curious.
Right.
I mean, I guess I'm happy and maybe a little surprised that he's gotten such a pass for what happened in the playoffs.
Yeah, but Teddy, I think
that was the last time. That was the last time you saw his team.
Fair enough, but I don't know that if someone were to evaluate, me by one story, if even it was a big story, I don't know how fair it would be. I think anything that you look at his body of work, and that what people like Mark said, what have said about him, who vouch for him,
right?
I think it outweighs one bad half.
But you write 200 something columns a year, and that was a playoff game, and
I think the other thing that factored in was that he works for Andy Reid. And right. I think this may work counter to the argument of why he has credibility, but Andy Reid probably called the majority of those plays, even though nobody will say it.
Right.
And I think that you've kind of given the benefit of the doubt, because everybody that knows Andy Reid knows that he's a head coach, but also the play caller.
But I loved when they asked Matt Nagy what happened in the playoffs. Did Andy Reid call those plays? He goes, I called every one of those plays, and I'll own it.
He owned it.
Be better because of it. That was also after he got the Bears job, right? Correct.
Right. Yeah.
So.
But he said that, I think, during the interview.
Yeah, I mean, you never score any points by being a weasel and saying, oh, I only called the good plays.
Would you not have hired him because of that? Would you have gone with more experience?
I don't know. I mean, I would have had to interview everybody. Yeah. But I'm just surprised that everybody is so bullish despite that's the
and
last one.
You know, the thing about it, it seems genuine, too, because usually people
I think
are
that's
say,
it, Mark. I think that's what it is, Teddy, because when you talk to the guy, and again, I've not shared his company for more than a couple times. You know, I don't think we've been around him enough, but when you get the first impression, it's that he doesn't have anything to hide.
Yeah.
That he's not a phony.
Yeah.
That he's very sincere. And I think he's secure enough to acknowledge these flaws that everybody can see.
And I'm a big believer in, you spend time with somebody and you just know that guy gets it, that guy's smart. Pat Fitzgerald, anybody spends 30 seconds with him, you say, I want that guy to be a coach. Then you have Tim Beckman, spend 30 seconds with him. You'd say, that guy can't manage, a diner at 2 in the morning.
We say the words OSCE.
Yeah, I mean, so I do understand this,
there's a presence.
You feel confident.
There's a presence that Matt Nagy has, I think, that when you are around him, you understand. And I think you understand what the Bears saw in him to say, they met with Josh McDaniels, no disrespect. They met with Josh McDaniels, they met with Matt Nagy, and they came away.
We
got to get that guy.
So and he wanted this job.
And that's the other thing, Cap. He's motivated to be here. And how refreshing it is to hear a coach say, I want to coach the Chicago Bears. That resonates with that audience.
Is Jordan Howard a fit in the Matt Nagy offense? Do you see anything coming next Thursday where you go, whoa, the Bears did that? Because we didn't see Trubisky coming a year ago.
Wouldn't shock me, Cap, but I don't think that – number one, I think that there's a misconception that Matt Nagy's offense doesn't want to run the ball or doesn't run the ball between the tackles.
But he has a running back that can't catch the
ball. That's the bigger problem. Okay, so Jordan Howard fits in their running attack. Is he as versatile as you want? No. It's also year one, It's going to take probably 2 years before you see maybe three – what you really want to see out of this offense. He can grow into that. It's going to be somebody else that is going to be the running back of the Bears when they're really good. I don't know. I think Jordan Howard's sort of a round or square peg in a round hole.
But you have Tariq Cohen. So you have a guy who's completely opposite of Jordan Howard. So I think that helps balance.
You have Tariq Cohen. You have Benny Cunningham to his back for whatever that's worth. I get it. He's, lower on the depth chart. But I also think that, you have one of the ways you could tell the worth of a head coach is how he makes his – I mean, this is a 1,000-yard rusher. So it's up to Matt Nagy.
More than
Exactly. To find a place to put him in positions to win. So that's what being a head coach is all about.
He can't catch the ball.
I know. Well,
it's hard to put him in positions to succeed when
he can catch the football.
He's limited.
I mean, I've seen the drops, yes. Yeah. But it's not like he can't can't catch anything that goes his way. And like I said,
I don't know that I'd trust him with the fine china, Mark.
I would not. Okay. I would let him pass right through. Yeah. But you find a place for a guy that is that talented, that is Pro Bowl level running back, you find a place for him to thrive.
So who should they draft? Who do you want to see him draft?
I mean, look, what would it take to move up to make sure I got Bradley Chubb? I think
don't move up again. Don't give up.
What I probably would do at 8, hoping 4 quarterbacks went before me and Barkley, right, means 5 guys gone. So I'm going to get one of Chubb, Minkah Fitzpatrick, Roquan Smith, Quentin Nelson.
Great players.
And take an impact guy, best at their positions right there. If the price wasn't exorbitant, and I talked to Lewis Riddick the other day, he said Bradley Chubb is the best edge rusher I've seen in a long time. Yep. He said, and if you could move heaven and earth and get him.
I heard that about Myles Garrett, too.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say.
And they love Myles Garrett.
I know. I'm just saying. And you got, relative to the topic, if Saquon Barkley is there at 8.
He's never going to be.
For whatever reason.
You take him.
Jets better take him at 3 if he will. That's all. That's a whole other topic. They're completely screwed this up.
As far as the Bears are concerned, it's
the quarterback who's not going to be.
Jets Talk Live is at 7 o'clock.
Oh, I'll be here.
Baker Mayfield is the Jets quarterback.
What are the Colts and Buccaneers going to do? That's the question.
Right. They're not going to take a quarterback.
Okay,
you know that. And Chubb is probably going to be one of those guys they take.
Right. And Quentin Nelson.
Probably
too,
right.
Quentin Nelson could be in play for the Colts. You hear that because of their obvious same motivation as the Bears have. Yeah. Protect your quarterback.
73% right now say the Bears should take defense. I love Roquan Smith at Georgia. I think he's a beast.
Totally.
Beast.
I understand that tendency. I understand that's the way most people would go. I would really like to see them take an offensive player, the best offensive player available.
Really?
Quentin Nelson is going to be a guy for the next 6 to 8 years. He's going to be a standout in this league. I think that
– that's not going to happen at 8, though, do you think?
Quentin Nelson could be there.
They love him. I mean, he could absolutely go at 8.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, of course,
you
I would take
that he could go at 8. Quentin Nelson.
I think he may be gone before.
Oh, yeah, right.
Could be.
If he's there, of course.
But
okay,
if 3 or 4 quarterbacks, Rich Campbell had a good breakdown of this yesterday in the Tribune. If 3 or 4 quarterbacks go, like as you point out, one of those guys could be there.
Minkah Fitzpatrick,
such a good player,
unbelievable.
Tremaine Edmonds.
Let's assume that Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield are all gone in the top 7.
Oh, my gosh,
7.
That's a dream scenario for the Bears.
And Saquon Barkley.
Could happen.
And Bradley Chubb.
Right.
Okay, those 6 are gone.
Right.
You're getting Roquan Smith, Minkah Fitzpatrick,
Denzel Ward.
I
would take Quentin Nelson.
They're all good. And it seems like all those Ohio State guys turn out really good, especially the DBs. So I trust Denzel Ward and his incredible speed,
even though he's a little smaller.
Yep.
You need an impact guy, obviously, if you're picking in the top 10. That's something that they have struggled with. Leonard Floyd is not a guy that is, to me, if you check a box, yes or no, you're not sure yet.
You're not sure.
You should be.
But you need another edge rusher.
Kevin White was a top 10 pick.
Bradley Chubb's a great football player.
Definitely.
He is. I don't know.
They're in a good spot this year. I feel like, this draft is going to be 10, 12.
I kind of like thinking of it as a draft day scenario. You know, there's a name with a piece of paper that Ryan Pace writes down at the beginning of the day, right? And says he's got to take that guy. And that guy falls to
him.
That's
crazy. But you should never, I feel like you should never have that strategy where you have to take one guy. That's when you get into trouble.
That's the guy you don't have to take. That's the guy you want to take.
Jamal Adams, no matter what.
Jets. Great pick last year.
Yeah, how about that?
I loved him.
Something like that, right?
Loved him.
Yeah. I kind of like that.
Jamal Adams, who falls into your, who's a great player, who just for some reason kind of falls.
Vontae Mack, baby.
And I say that. Last year, that's exactly what happened. It's like what happened. Ryan Pace wrote down Mitch Trubisky, no matter what.
Yeah, I'm getting him
no matter what. No matter how many picks it takes, I'm fixated on getting the quarterback.
Yep. And we just had Kuiper on and Riddick, and both said if Trubisky was in this draft, armed with the knowledge you have today, he's the number one pick.
But not if Deshaun Watson is also in this draft.
But he couldn't have been. Deshaun Watson was done, right?
Well, wait a second. But I mean, we're just doing – you know what I'm saying?
Well, right.
I mean, I know you loved Trubisky, and it was a good pick, but he's only the second-best quarterback from last year.
I'm not so sure about that.
Oh, please.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Remember to watch the show weekdays on CSN and visit csnchicago.com for previous episodes of the podcast and all the latest sports news and highlights.